government has carefully maintained its horrendous lie of a coup d'etat, which is what the JFK killing was, and this deep state is still in control today. We have a wide open border now because the CIA is running drugs. They are dealing with pedophilia. We're bringing fentanyl in the country. The CIA is a criminal organization, and it needs to be shut down.
Hey friends, thanks so much for tuning in. Sean from SGT Report here. That was prolific author and friend of SGT Report and Truth, Dr. Jerome Corsi. And guys, in this one, we lay the deep state bare with the absolute indisputable truth and proof that the CIA was directly involved in the murder and assassination of our dear president, John F. Kennedy. You're not going to want to miss this one, guys. Nothing but the facts. Before we begin, just a quick word about our sponsor. We've told you the truth about the destruction and the demise of the US dollar and its purchasing power on this channel for more than a decade. So how do you feel about leaving your money in the bank? Not great, right? It's losing value every single day because it's being debased. So if it's stressing you out, why not invest smarter with Noble Gold Investments? Precious metals are simple and real, tangible wealth. And by the way, gold just broke a new all-time high in USD. There isn't a company on the stock market that was around 2,000 years ago, but guess what? Gold was. It's a reliable, dependable, and authentic way to protect your wealth. That's why you can't go wrong with precious metals. They always have your back. Noble Gold Investments is the same. Their American-based experts will show you how to set and forget your IRA or 401k. Now, there's no guarantee of any kind with any investment, so do your own due diligence, but you'll get a dedicated professional assigned to you from Noble Gold. So no hassle, no call centers. This month, Noble Gold Investments is giving a free quarter-ounce gold standard coin with every qualifying IRA investment. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com to claim your gold coin. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com. Hey friends, welcome back. Thank you so very, very much for tuning in. It's Sean from SGT Report with one of my favorite returning guests, a prolific author, a friend of mankind, and a friend to all of us, a friend of truth, the one, the only, Dr. Jerome Corsi. A big show today, guys. Buckle up. Doc, how are you?
I'm great, Sean. It's great to be back with you. Thank you.
So nice to have you. And we started chatting before I hit record. And I told you, I got to get you on sometime to talk about the Shroud of Turin, one of the most beautiful artifacts in the history of mankind, perhaps the most important artifact, religious artifact or otherwise, in the history of mankind, in my opinion. He wrote a book about it, guys, the Shroud Codex, but so many other great books. Hunting Hitler, new scientific evidence that Hitler escaped Nazi Germany, the truth about energy, global warming, and climate change. It's just book after book after book. How about the birth certificate, Obama? Where is it? Also a book called Abomination. Who really killed Kennedy? The Final Analysis is the new book, guys. Let me show you. Forensic analysis of the JFK autopsy x-rays prove two headshots from the right front and one from the rear, by David W. Mantic and Dr. Jerome Corsi. I want to start with a soundbite here in just one second, but Doc, you're a very prolific man, and we appreciate your work and your heart. You really care about this country, unlike so many of our Congress critters and senatorial goblins.
Well, thank you very much, John. I mean, I've got a passion for telling the truth and getting this out there, and I've been doing it for a long time. It's not always been easy, but no one ever promised it would be. This book, I think, is maybe one of the most important I've written, and I think your audience will agree as we get into it.
Well, and by the way, you told me just before I hit record that some very important people have reached out to you. Napolitano, Judge Napolitano being one, saying that he agrees with you, probably your most important work. And RFK Jr. himself has requested a copy of this book, correct?
Yes, yesterday, RFK Jr. asked for a copy of the book. This morning, I sent it to him on Amazon. He'll have it on Thursday.
What a small world, guys. I keep saying it. I think that's all part of the Great Awakening as we all come together for truth in order to save humanity and save our beloved republic from this communist onslaught. All right, so here's a clip. This is Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Very brief clip, and then we're going to play one other. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. discussing who he believes played a key role in the assassination of his uncle, John F. Kennedy.
Who do you think really killed your uncle?
Well, I think there's overwhelming evidence that the CIA was involved in this murder. I think it's beyond a reasonable doubt at this point people, you know, who question that.
All right, then it kicks out to these clowns who say, well, I don't know if we can prove that. I mean, that's a stretch. Well, here's another clip. RFK Jr.
There's a six-year cover-up. The, you know, the Warren Commission was run by Alan Dulles, who was the head of the CIA, who my uncle fired. Congress found that, yeah, it was a plot. It was a conspiracy. There were multiple people involved.
All right. And of course, they won't let him continue talking there in that Fox News clip. But here's one last clip I want to play, guys. And then we're going to turn it over to Dr. Corsi. Just a very brief clip of George Bush Sr. at Gerald Ford's funeral laughing about the lone gunman. Listen to this.
After a deluded gunman assassinated President Kennedy, after a deluded gunman assassinated President Kennedy, after a deluded gunman assassinated President Kennedy.
I'm not so sure what's funny about a deluded gunman, Doc. Please help me understand.
There's something always been weird about George H.W. Bush, and he sometimes looks demonic to me. And that clip, he looked downright demonic. He knew it was not Lee Harvey Oswald. He was in Dallas that day, and I'm sure he had advanced knowledge of the assassination. He was CIA far longer than he ever claimed to be. And there's documents that put George H.W. Bush in Dallas that day. I wrote about them in my first book, which is on Kennedy's assassination, which is Who Really Killed JFK. That was 10 years ago. And now this book is out and it's doing extremely well. And I'm going to be very interested to see Robert Kennedy's reaction. It validates, it gives him all the confirmation he needs that the CIA and the military-industrial complex and the Justice Department and a bunch of other Secret Service combined killed Jack Kennedy. And this book proves without a doubt that Jack Kennedy was shot from the front and once from the back, but not from the Texas School Book Depository.
And it should be noted that Bush Sr., of course, went on to become the director of the CIA after becoming vice president under Ronald Reagan, for those of you who are too young to remember that history. So to me, all roads do lead back to the CIA. And pretty much the control of our government at this point seems to be, at least to some extent, in the control of the CIA. I mean, again, your book about Obama and the birth certificate. I've said for many years that Obama is a creation of the CIA. I firmly believe that. Do you think I have that right or wrong?
Oh, yes. His life is a CIA legend. It's made up. There's not documents to validate his life. His life doesn't fit together. His life doesn't fit together any more than the government's case against Lee Harvey Oswald. They both are faulty from the beginning because they're lies. And Obama's been lying about who he is for probably his entire life. I'm not entirely sure he knows who he is. Mm-hmm. But that's another question. I want to deeply get into this book today. And it's based on Dr. Mantic's work. Dr. Mantic is a PhD in physics. And he also, and by the way, his specialty is radiation technology. And he also is an MD. He's a practicing radiation oncologist, which means he's been reading x-rays for cancer patients for more than 40 years. He's been in the archives, National Archives, and he studied the JFK autopsy skull x-rays more than anyone else. He's been publishing over 30 years, his findings, but again, it's hard to understand. His writings are very scientific, and I decided to make this book able to be read by anyone. We put all the science in the background, and Dr. Mantic's conclusions are there are three extant skull x-rays. They are all copies. They're not the original, and they've all been altered, all three, to mask evidence of frontal shots and to put the blame on Lee Harvey Oswald. But secondly, there's clear evidence in the x-rays, unmistakable evidence, and I'm going to show it to you in a minute, that there were two shots from the front to Jack Kennedy's head and one shot from the back. The shot to the back was at a low angle. It was not from the Texas School Book Depository. No shot from the Texas School Book Depository hit Jack Kennedy at all in the head. And that's the story we're going to explain. And this is science. By the time I'm finished, you're going to see this is indisputable. I can prove everything I'm going to say today. And the book is 564 pages. It's 1,000 footnotes, very heavily referencing government documents, And the people who have been interviewing me, people who have been reading it, I think now Robert Kennedy himself, Jr., is going to see that he's right, and this book gives him all the evidence he needs to make the case of the American people. I think if Robert Kennedy, Jr. does it, he will significantly advance his presidential campaign.
All right, I'm going to turn it over to you. Just one final question for the audience. It's really a rhetorical one, but why is this so important some 60 years later, Jerome? Why are we doing this show? Who cares, right? Who cares, young people might say. Well, friends, if we don't suss out the truth, if we don't get to the bottom of these stories and these conspiracies, well, then we're hopelessly lost and our republic is hopelessly lost. Doc, why are we having this conversation? Why is this still so important to you?
Because the day Jack Kennedy was killed, November 22nd, 1963, was the day the deep state decided to enact a coup d'etat and take over control of the government. The deep state's been running this country since 1963, if not sooner or earlier, and is still running it. We have a president whom the special counsel says is suffering from such senior dementia that he cannot be charged with potential criminal offenses for mishandling government classified documents when he's vice president, showing these documents to his biographer. Well, if Joe Biden is suffering from senior dementia to that extent, why is he president? Well, he's not president. You know, he's bumbling around the White House. Hopefully they get enough drugs into him so he doesn't walk into the walls. And Obama's running the country. Some deep state is running the country. By now, they don't need a president. If they could put a puppet or a hologram in there, the deep state would probably prefer it. We have been living in a Truman Show, you know, Jim Carrey Truman Show movie, where the CIA has been writing the script that we take as reality. And by the time I'm finished, we're going to be asking, you know, why did buildings collapse in 9/11 that were not hit by airplanes? Where were the weapons of mass destruction? And when we were invaded to get rid of Saddam Hussein, 1991, we're going to be asking a lot of questions about the lies we've been told and have continued to be told while the deep state is architecting to enslave us. And now they're out in the open trying to do it. So this is the origin. And once we're finished with this, you're going to have no doubt that you've been lied to for 60 years about Lee Harvey Oswald. So let's plunge in and I want to show you the evidence.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect. Perfect response. Last thing I'll say is Robert F. Kennedy Jr. also believes firmly, 100%, he said it on record time and time again, that the CIA also killed his father, Bobby Kennedy.
This is the cover of the book. And you'll see the title is The Assassination of John F. Kennedy, The Final Analysis. And I put the arrows where the shots occurred. I'm going to show you them in detail. There was a shot that came in at the right forehead. It was at the hairline, and it traced with bullet fragments all the way to the top of the head. You can still see them. I'm going to show you very detailed pictures of that. Another shot hit at the right temporal bone, right here, the temporal bone, right in front of the ear, right ear, and it blew out the back of Jack Kennedy's head. And the third shot hit at a low angle from the back, and it right at the knob in the back of your head, and it exited in the front. But again, it was from a low angle, probably the Daltex building. There's also a shot through the window that hit Jack Kennedy in the throat. And so we've got at least three shooters. We've got a shooter on the other side of Dealey Plaza, across from the grassy knoll, up by the railroad yard behind that concrete fence over on top of the triple underpass. That's one. Second one on the grassy knoll. Okay, and the third, probably in the Daltex building behind Jack Kennedy. Now, I want to get into the book so I can show you exactly how the shooting occurred. This is a figure 3.9 in the book, and this is a x-ray of what they call a right lateral x-ray. The front of Kennedy's head, and if you can see my cursor, is up here at the front, the dark area. That's the forehead in here. This is the back of the head. Now, this shot came in right here in the forehead, and it broke up. It was the bullet started breaking up, and it had bullet fragments. You can see the trail. You know it's a frontal shot because the largest of the fragments is in the back of the head. The largest fragment when a bullet breaks up is the heaviest, has the most momentum, it'll travel the farthest.
And no exit wound, right?
No exit wound. Absolutely no exit wound. So that's clearly a frontal shot. In fact, if I can, just let me find the, in my, I have the book in front of me too, so I can kind of page and see where the, yes, I'm going to go here a little bit earlier and show you how it entered. The shot entered right at that knob. Those are it right in this area here. This x-ray has been a little bit modified to try to make it fuzzy, but that's where it entered. And you know that because in the archives, the x-ray is seen in the archives, when the bullet comes in, there's a bunch of little tiny dust-like metal fragments here, and then there's a dust trail, little tiny, when it first enters. And then it goes through the large trail as it goes to the back of the head. Now, this red blob, what Dr. Manning determined is probably mercury. This is probably a mercury bullet. So we get to this. There was pre-autopsy surgery of Jack Kennedy's head at Bethesda. I'm going to cover that in a few minutes, which is pretty shocking. But they couldn't remove the mercury bullets. I can remove steel and metal, but you can't remove mercury in a surgical procedure unless you take out the whole tissue. And they didn't do that. They left this trail. That's absolutely clearly a frontal shot. Okay, now let's go to the shot from behind. Let me find the picture here. Again, I'm going to look in the book for just a second to get the illustrations I want. It's really 4-1, so I'm going to search here for...
Well, and let me just say, too, because I don't know how many young people listen to my broadcast, but for those who just aren't familiar with this story because you're so young, and yes, you know JFK was murdered, this first frontal shot proves the official story is a lie because Lee Harvey Oswald is said to have been at, what, the sixth floor?
Is on the sixth... Right.
Go ahead.
He's on the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository, which is behind Jack Kennedy when the shooting occurs, not in front, but behind. Okay, so if we go back to the text here, let me pull it up, and I go to figure 4.1. So if Lee Harvey Oswald was the killer, all the shots had to have come from the back. Two frontal shots means that there was a shooter in the front, at least one, probably two. And that means that Lee Harvey Oswald is not the lone gun assailant, that none of the shots in the head came from the angle of Texas School Book Depository, makes it doubtful that anyone fired any shots from there. And clearly, Oswald did not pass the paraffin test, and we'll cover that in a minute, but I think he was complete. I don't think he fired a shot that day. When a bullet enters in the on the side of the head, this, by the right ear, it's kind of at an oblique angle. It's like a tangential and oblique shot. In other words, it doesn't go straight through the head. It goes through the head at an angle. It makes a keyhole fracture. So the bullet hits in a circle, then the fracture lines are out in a radius that look like a keyhole. Now, if we look at the x-rays, there's the x-ray at the entry point in the temporal bone by the ear. It's a keyhole. This is an enhanced photograph. Okay, so the back of Jack Kennedy's head was blown away. The back was completely blown away. Now, I want to show you in terms of the Kennedy, how it happened in terms of the assassination. I'm just going to go through a bunch of pages here and get to the next figures I want. The back of the Kennedy's head was blown away. It was called the Harper fragment. And by the way, I do an awfully lot of, there's a lot of illustrations in this book, a lot of figures. The forehead shot stayed at the top of the head. It's the red line. The shot to the temple was an angle, so that's Grassy Knoll. This one may have come from Grassy Knoll further up, or it might have been, depending on the angle of the head when it was hit, could have been the shooter on the south side of the Grassy Knoll up by the railroad yard. And by the way, we have a figure. There was a figure there. There was someone during the shooting was there at that location on the railroad yard. This is the Harper fragment. It was a piece of bone blown out of the back of Jack Kennedy's head by the shot that hit him in the right ear. Now, I go through also showing you, so, okay, here's the car coming down. The one shooter would have been at the railroad yard over here, one shooter in the Grassy Knoll, one shooter behind Kennedy, and the Daltex building. Okay, so I want to show you the pictures from the Zapruder film that show the sequence of the shots. Okay, now this is frame 331. And you can see Jack Kennedy's hit by the side of the head. I'm going to try to enlarge that. Let me see if I can figure out how to do that. Tools, I think you do it with, there's a way to enlarge that. View, zoom. Okay, so you can see Jackie standing over Jack. The front of Jack Kennedy's head has just exploded by the ear. You can see that. Okay, now frame 313. One people know, Jack Kennedy was hit in the back of the head and you get brain matter spraying up from the top of his head to the right. About 2 seconds later, on frame 331, he's hit in the side of the head and the back of the head blows out. Now, at this time, Clint Hill, was the Secret Service agent, was trying to run up to the car. See, it blows. This is the shot at 331 that blows Jack Kennedy back into the left. He's thrown violently back into the left. The shot is obviously coming from the grassy knoll. Clint Hill is trying to get this bumper here. He's trying to grab on the handrail at the left back of the car. He's sprayed with blood and brain matter. This officer over here in the inboard motorcycle is named Barbie Hargis. He is spread. He's hit so hard by Kennedy's brain matter, he thinks he's hit. And the Harper fragment goes flying off into the grass in the background there on the left. Everything's back into the left. Grassy knoll shot. Now Jackie begins to try to climb out of the car. And she's reaching for something. And what she's reaching for is a piece of Jack Kennedy's head that is in the left back of the trunk. Clint Hill's now up there. He's trying to help her. She gets what she wants, and then she goes back into the car. Okay, so she is back into the car. Now, what Clint Hill said in terms of his description of what happened to him in the shooting, I'll try to find that paragraph here for you right away. But he says it very clearly that he was splattered by JFK's brain material. Okay, so here's Clint Hill. He said, as I approached the vehicle, JFK's limousine, there was a third shot. It hit the president in the head, upper right rear of the right ear, causing a gaping hole in his head, which caused brain matter, blood, and bone fragments to spew forth out over the car, over myself. At that point, Mrs. Kennedy came up out of the back seat, onto the trunk of the car. She was trying to retrieve something that had gone off to the right rear. She did not know I was there. At that point, I grabbed Mrs. Kennedy and put her back in her seat. The president fell into her lap to his left. The right side of his head was exposed. I could see his eyes were fixed. There was a hole in the upper right rear portion of his head, about the size of my palm. Most of the gray matter in that area had been removed and was scattered throughout the entire car, including on Mrs. Kennedy. I turned and gave the follow-up car crew the thumbs down, indicating that we were in a very dire situation. The driver accelerated, and when he got up to the lead car, which was driven by Chief Perry, the Dallas Chief of Police. Okay, so that's the sequence. In fact, that's from the Harper fragment, we know that the shot, the back of the head hit first. Kennedy's head is moving forward. That's frame 313. He's violently thrown back in frame 331. The shot at the top left of the head, or top right of the head, that we can see the bullet trail, could have come anywhere in that sequence. Okay, but again, the two that we know for sure, because the Harper fragment has evidence of an entrance wound, because there's a entrance wounds are puncture wounds. Exit wounds are blowouts. So there's an entrance wound of the Harper fragment on the right, and then it's blown out of the back of the head, which means it is clearly a exit wound. Now, all the doctors at Parkland Hospital claimed that what they saw was Jack Kennedy shot from the front. In fact, the doctors came on and did a press conference, and they said Jack Kennedy was shot from the front, and because they could see the puncture to the throat, they could see the blowout to the right of the head, and they all, if I can find the picture, they all held their hands up behind their head to the right and said that part was blown out. I'm going to find a quotation here from Dr. Crenshaw, who talked about what he saw when he was looking into Kennedy's head at the trauma room. This is a trauma room on at Parkland. said, I walked to the president's head to take a closer look. This is in Parkland Hospital, right after the shooting occurred. His entire right cerebral hemisphere appeared to be gone. It means the entire right of the brain was gone. An empty cavity. All I could see there was mangled, bloody tissue. From the damage I saw, there was no doubt in my mind that the bullet had entered the head through the front. And as it surgically passed through his cranium, the missile obliterated most of the temporal, that's by the ear, the side, and all of the parietal, that's the top part, and the occipital, the back part, lobes, before it lacerated the cerebellum, an organ at the very back of the brain of different color. The wound resembled a deep furrow in a freshly plowed field. Several years later, when I viewed slow motion films of the bullet striking the president, the physics of the headshot being thrown back provided final and complete confirmation of a frontal entry by the bullet to the cranium. Doctors at Parkland gave a press conference. They said that Jack Kennedy was hit in the right front, and they told that to the world. The Secret Service, they only worked on Kennedy for about 15 minutes because the doctors at Parkland knew he was dead. There was no question that he was dead. And the fact is that his head had been blown away, and the whole right side. So the doctors finally said, stop. You know, they were going to give him a heart massage. They said, you're not bringing this guy back. He's dead. So they declared him dead. About 2 hours later, Dr. Marshall Perry and Kemp Clark, who had tried to save Kennedy's life, came out and said he was shot from the front. They said it 7 or 8 times. Okay, now, the Secret Service calls up a funeral home and they get a casket. And that casket is brought around, and the casket is a ceremonial bronze casket. They wrap Jack Kennedy's body in the casket, in towels, his head in towels, in sheets. They put him in the casket. And then who shows up is Dr. Earl Rose, who's the coroner and a justice of the peace, who said, this is a shooting in Dallas. It was a crime in Dallas. There's no federal crime to kill the president. We are doing the autopsy. Secret Service pulled the guns, put them up against the wall, and took the casket out at gunpoint. By the way, when the car first pulled into Parkland, after they got John Connolly and Jack Kennedy out of the limousine, the Secret Service takes a pail of water and they start washing down the back seat. They're destroying a crime scene. People see the puncture hole through the windshield. It's clearly a entrance wound because it comes in at a like a pencil point puncture, and the outside of the windshield is smooth. The glass on the front and on the back, on the inside of the car, begins to fragment, and there's a whole debris of the glass that sprays back at the Jack Kennedy and the occupants of the car. People saw that the Secret Service cordoned it off. They wouldn't let people photograph it. They got the limousine out of there, and within 2 days, they had that limousine at Dearborn, Michigan, and they replaced the windshield. So the Secret Service was altering evidence from the beginning. Now, I'm going to make one more point, and then let's ask some questions, Sean. But the government had a problem. When Jack Kennedy left Dallas on Air Force One, you could see them bringing the ceremonial casket up, putting it into the Air Force One. There were pictures of that. They had a problem because a photographer from the AP named Altgens, Altgens, had taken a picture from the front of the limousine. And you can see the Texas School Book Depository in the background. So in other words, all the shots were from the front, but the problem was the Texas School Book Depository was behind the limousine when the shooting started. So therefore, if Lee Harvey Oswald was the shooter, you had the body with different evidence. The body did not show shots from the back. And the government had a problem because about 1 hour into the flight going back to Washington, D.C., the Dallas police announced that they had arrested Lee Harvey Oswald and that he had done the shooting from the 6th floor of the Dallas, Texas School Book Depository, which, according to the Altgens photograph, is behind the limousine when the shooting starts. I'm going to show you that picture right now. This is a close-up of that picture. And if I can find it right here, that's the Altgens picture, and I'll zoom it back and to get a better view of it. And
I think you need to share your screen again.
Oh, that's right. Thank you. There, it should be shown now. And let me, this is the Alchin photograph. Let me zoom it out a little bit, or zoom it. I want to get a little bit better view of it here. Hold on, get this view to zoom and put it back to 125%. There's Kennedy. His arm is up to his neck. He'd been shot in the neck. The circle is where the bullet entered the windshield. In the background is the Texas School Book Depository. It's impossible for there to be frontal shots if Lee Harvey Oswald is the shooter. Government's got a problem. The body's the best evidence. The body shows frontal shots. The setup for Lee Harvey Oswald, 3 spent shells dropped on the floor of the 6th floor of the School Book Depository in a right corner window with boxes arranged like it, a sniper's nest, and a rifle found. Originally, the rifle found was a Mauser. By the way, Mauser stamped on the trigger mechanism of a Mauser. That gets replaced with a Mannlicher Carcano rifle, which is a bad World War II Italian rifle, which wasn't very accurate in World War II, and it had a faulty scope on it. So that's the setup. That's the narrative. This is the Jim Carrey Truman Show the government's written to frame Lee Harvey Oswald and deflect a blame for the government killing Kennedy, which we're going to prove here is what happened, because the government now has control of the body. Okay, now when the body lands in Air Force One, you see a Navy hearse pulls up to the Andrews Air Force Base, and they take John Kennedy's body out in the ceremonial casket. And Jackie and Bobby are there. They get in the hearse, a Navy gray hearse, and they drive off to Bethesda. The drivers of that hearse, by the way, are Greer and Kellerman, the 2 Secret Service agents who were driving in Dallas. Johnson gives a speech. The lights go off. Well, that casket is empty. Jack Kennedy's body had been moved prior to Air Force One taking off from Love Field out of the ceremonial casket, probably stored in one of the 2 storage compartments of the airplane. How do we know this? We know this because and I'm going to go here to another table here. I'm going to go now skip to the back of the book. Hold on. I don't want this. When the body arrives at the morgue, it arrives in a pinkish gray shipping casket, and it comes in the back of the morgue. First, a helicopter lands at Bethesda. The body has been put in a helicopter, and it's been flown to Bethesda, picked up in a black ambulance and driven over to the morgue, which is a short distance, and it is unloaded in a shipping casket. I'm going to read you the description here from a guy named O'Connor, who was one of the corpsmen who witnessed the casket coming into the morgue. Let me find here and read to you what he says. Hold on a second. Okay. So Paul O'Connor, he says, the back of the morgue opened up and a crew of hospital corpsmen, this is at 6:30 at night on November 22nd, 1963, night of the assassination, 6:30, an hour and a half before the official autopsy. Paul O'Connor, Navy corpsman, the back of the morgue opened up and a crew of hospital corpsmen and a higher ranking corpsman, Dennis David, brought in a plain pinkish gray, what I call shipping casket. It was not ornate. It was not damaged. It was just pinkish gray casket. They brought it up into the morgue and they set it. We had 2 tables in the morgue, autopsy tables, and they were back to front. They weren't side by side. They were back to front. They brought it up front where we were. At that time, we opened up the coffin. Inside was a body bag. William Matson-Law asked him. Matson-Law did a lot of the interviewing, did a very brilliant job of the Navy corpsmen who were there at the autopsy. He said, now, are you sure that was a body bag? Paul O'Connor, absolutely sure there was a body bag. We unzipped it quickly. Inside was a nude body with a bloody sheet wrapped around the head of the body. We lifted the body onto the table. That's not how Jack Kennedy left. It's not how he left Parkland. The body had been moved into the shipping casket and there's now a surreptitious attempt to get Jack Kennedy in the shipping casket. Why? Because the 2 autopsy pathologists, who were Dr. Humes and Boswell, were instructed by the Navy to do pre-autopsy surgery. They did. They took scalpels. They made incisions on the frontal wound at the forehead to obscure it. They took a saw, and they took off the parietal bone at the top of JFK's head. They used probes, and they went into JFK's head, and they started messing around looking for bullet fragments. I'm going to show you figure 6.4 in the book. I'll show you what JFK's head looked like when they got finished with him in the autopsy room, pre-autopsy signature, surgery. When they got finished with Jack Kennedy's head, it was a complete mess. This is what it looked like.
Lord.
The incision in the front was all torn apart, made like a flying wing. The parietal bone at the top of Jack Kennedy's head is gone. He's looking down into his brains. They've just messed up his brains, looking all over for steel, for metal. This is not in the autopsy gallery room because the autopsy gallery room does not have a head brace like that. I've actually got, I think, a color picture on here, which is even, that's what the back of the head, look at how they messed that up.
Good Lord.
That is not how Kennedy looked. And these are official. These are pictures are real. These are not doctored. This is how he really looked. And in fact, Boswell in the autopsy made a sketch and he said this part was missing. Well, it was only missing because Boswell and Humes took it off with the saw. And they knew that. They're lying. Okay, so Jack Kennedy, and just let me show you that they do write missing there. You can see the word missing. Okay, and so that's right there. He says missing. Yeah, well, it wasn't missing in Parkland. This is not how the head looked at Parkland. The doctors here are lying. And what the case is that when the body is brought into the morgue at 8 o'clock by the honor guard, it's put back in the ceremonial casket. It's brought back into the morgue with the honor guard. And they open up the casket, put Jack Kennedy in. The audience gasps because they know this head is, this is not how a head shot by a couple of bullets in Dallas would look. And so Humes evidently says there was pre-autopsy surgery to the head. He's admitting it. And that was written by two FBI agents attending the autopsy. They put it in their 302 report, their after-action report, that there was surgery pre-autopsy surgery to the head. Okay, now there were two other casket entries. Finally, the Navy hearse with Jackie and Bobby arrives in front of Bethesda Hospital about 7:17 that night. Jackie and Bobby get out. They go into the VIP lounge. Kellerman and Greer. Greer is driving, the two Secret Service agents. He doesn't know where the morgue is at Bethesda. Kellerman gets out of the car and he goes into Bethesda to find it. The two FBI agents, Siebert and O'Neill, show up and they say, well, we know where the morgue is. We come here every year to get our FBI physicals. They take the ambulance with the ceremonial casket around to the morgue. Finally, Kellerman shows up. Kellerman and Greer and Siebert and O'Neill bring the heavy ceremonial bronze casket into the morgue. They're not allowed to enter the morgue. They drop it in the anteroom and told to go away. Jack Kennedy's body is already in the morgue from the shipping casket, and it's out of the body bag, and Humes and Boswell are messing the head up completely, looking for bullets, altering the wounds. Okay, and then finally, the honor guard, which left Andrews Air Force, is driving to get to Bethesda. Well, Admiral Galloway was one of the commanders at the Bethesda Naval Hospital, takes another Navy ambulance, and he finds the honor guard, and he chases them around. They follow him around for about 10 minutes, you know, in a wild goose chase all around Washington, D.C. And finally, they arrive just in time to come into the morgue, and Jack Kennedy's body is back in the ceremonial casket, and they walk it into the autopsy room at the gallery. And that's when it's admitted there was pre-autopsy surgery to the head. And so the body's been altered. And by the way, the military are at the funeral. Curtis LeMay, one of the joint chiefs, is known for smoking a cigar. He was there smoking a cigar. During the autopsy, the Navy personnel asked him to put out his cigar, he blew smoke in their face. The military gave commands to the doctors as to what they were permitted and not permitted to do that night. The doctors had no idea how to make front wounds into back wounds. They, you know, and there was another problem of the three shells found in the sixth floor meant that there could only be three shots. Well, one of the shots hit Tag, who was a bystander standing by the triple underpass. It nicked his cheek. So only two shots hit. And they've got to show all this head damage to Jack Kennedy. They got to show that the bullet was a bullet wound in the back, something in the back, a wound in the throat, and Connolly got hit. So they write four different autopsy reports. They burn them. They burn the notes. Doctors of Parkland, the doctors of Bethesda are calling the doctors of Parkland all night, telling them if they don't change their story, they could have been wrong. They don't say that, that they're not sure it was frontal wounds, that they, all the doctors who claim that it was frontal wounds at Parkland will be taken before medical boards and they'll all lose their certification. These were young doctors, some of them in their 30s with children. They buckled under the pressure. And so finally, browbeating, the government has now altered evidence. The government's been in control of the body. We have x-rays that are falsified. And all of this is done by the government. It's done by the military, run by the Secret Service. The CIA is putting out reports framing Oswald. Within minutes of the assassination, Oswald's description goes out over the All Points Bulletin and the Dallas Police to arrest him. An international dossier is circulated about who Oswald was, including that he defected, he was a Marine who defected to the Soviet Union. This is a architected narrative to frame Oswald that is a government-written narrative, and the mainstream media parrots it without investigation. The Department of Justice accepts the story and are told not to investigate, and the government's case doesn't fit together because now Arlen Specter, one of the counsel on the Warren Report, has to say a bullet hit Jack Kennedy in the head. Only one hit him in the head, did all this damage. And then the bullet hit him in the back. It came up the neck, took a right turn. It hit Connolly's ribs, broke Connolly's radial bone in his wrist, landed in his knee. Bullet number C, Commission Exhibit 399, and it's pristine. The entire story falls apart on the basis of Dr. Mantic's study of the x-rays. This is optical density information. It's science. It's indisputable once you see it. It doesn't require, you know, there are three shooters. At least the government lied. This was a coup d'etat, staged coup d'etat, where the deep state in 1963 decided to take over the government and kill the president. The military wanted to go to war in Vietnam. Jack Kennedy had not gone to war in the Cuban Missile Crisis. He back-channeled with Khrushchev, and they came up with an agreement to take missiles out of Turkey and take missiles out of Cuba. Everybody stood down from nuclear war. Jack Kennedy had written, just before his death, National Security Memorandum to withdraw troops from Vietnam. The military was, there were going to be billions of dollars made in Vietnam. The military wanted to fight that. Jack Kennedy was in the way. Lyndon Johnson would fight the war. There were a lot of contractors who were going to benefit from that money in Texas. And by the way, the Kennedys had arranged with Life magazine to publish an expose the next week exposing Billy Saul Estes as running sex clubs in D.C. for the senators and congressmen. He was a Lyndon Johnson associate. If Jack Kennedy had lived, Lyndon Johnson would have been off the 64 ticket the next week. And Jack Kennedy told that to Evelyn Lincoln, his secretary, before he left the White House. It's a shocking story. You know, the book is well as illustrated as you can see. It's, you know, as I can show it up here in the cover, it's 564 pages, a lot of illustrations, extremely well documented. And as you see right there, that's the whole story. Those three shots to the head. Sean?
It's so very grim. And it's the real history that the CIA and the Mockingbird mainstream media has been trying to cover up for 60 years. I do have a question for you, because from the top of the show, I personally indicted the CIA for their involvement in this, and that's clear. Okay, but what was the role of the Secret Service? You know, you noted, and I didn't realize this, that the Secret Service seized the casket. There's a piece of famous footage of JFK and Jackie in the limo on the tarmac, having gotten off of Air Force One and gotten in this limo. And there's a Secret Service agent running along with them. And he's called off duty somehow. And he throws his hands up in disgust, like, what? What's going on here? What Secret Service protocols were changed or violated that day?
Any number of them. First of all, the route was not secured. Windows were open. There were people on top of roofs. This was not protocol for the Secret Service or local police on a presidential motorcade. The nature of the motorcades accompanying the limousine were held back. They said, well, Kennedy didn't want them to be obscuring his vision with the crowd's nonsense. And motorcades, up until that point, Kennedy let the motorcycles operate wherever they wanted to operate. There was nobody on the running boards. There's nobody in the back running boards where Clint Hill tried to grab onto the car. He'd been there before during the motorcade. It's just that he went back to the Secret Service car behind Jack Kennedy just before the shooting when they were turning on Elm Street to come across into Houston to come across into Elm. The whole area where they shot on Elm Street, once you turn on Houston to go to Elm, you've got to go through the triple underpass. And in the photographs of the assassination, you can see that the curb in the killing zone, this area where between frames 313 and 331, are painted yellow. The curb is painted yellow. It's remarkable, but the kill zone is painted yellow. There's no reason for that except to mark it out. These shots are very difficult. If Lee Harvey Oswald was shooting from the sixth floor Texas School Book Depository, he had a shot straight down into the limousine when Jack Kennedy turned the corner from Houston Street to come onto Elm. The shot from the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository is very difficult because now the car headed down Elm Street is going down at about a 3-degree angle down, and it's curving, and you're shooting either above a tree or through a tree to get the angle. This is not a video game. You're not getting extra points for difficulty. Jack, if it was Lee Harvey Oswald, he could have taken his best shot a lot earlier. Mm-hmm. If it's a crossfire and a kill zone, well, these shooters were professional, whoever they were. They were cold-blooded. They're shooting at the president. They hit him in the head three times in this difficult shot. Anybody who has shot knows a moving target, especially going down and curving, requires a lot of compensation when you're pulling the trigger as to where that bullet's going to go. And there's people in the car. You don't want to hit Jackie. Mm-hmm. You're shooting through a windshield. There's two Secret Service agents there, and you don't want to hit Jackie. Jackie wasn't hit. The Secret Service agents weren't hit. Yet Kennedy's head was hit once in the forehead on the right, hit on the side from the grassy knoll, right ear, blew the back of his head out. That was a massive shot, hitting the back of his head from the Dow Tech. These were three top cold-blooded killers. Mm-hmm. And it was a coordinated attack. I'm sure it was timed shooting. A 1-100, 2-100, 3-100 shoot, and they do that again. So, three shots sound like one, or six shots sound like one, especially in the echo chamber of Dealey Plaza. It was a kill zone. It was an obvious kill zone, and he was a sitting duck. And that's how the government killed him in broad daylight. They hated Kennedy. They wanted to make a bloody, horrible statement. They took out a president. If our CIA can take out a president, who knows what the CIA is capable of doing today? How many wars have we fought? Tonkin Bay, Vietnam, another lying narrative, weapons of mass destruction that weren't there in Iraq. Mm-hmm. It goes on and on and on. We're just being the government intelligence agencies and the military-industrial complex want perpetual war, money being made, perpetual war. Now they want total control of the technology. They want to have the world for themselves. We the people are useless to them. And with the techniques of psychologically creating these mass delusions, we compare it in the book to being like a magic act, because your attention is diverted by how it's constructed. And then the narratives that come out are overwhelmingly framing Oswald. And we end the book with a memo from the CIA that was written in 1967 that says, anybody opposing the Warren Commission, we're going to run psychological operations on to destroy their narrative and to destroy them personally. This is where the term conspiracy theorist was built. Mm-hmm. The government has carefully maintained its horrendous lie of a coup d'etat, which is what the JFK killing was, and this deep state is still in control today.
Yeah, it's just so concerning that the CIA, I guess, would wield enough power to influence the Secret Service to take part in this, because it's clear now that the Secret Service didn't just help in the cover-up after the fact. There was Secret Service protocols that changed, that aided and abetted this crime against our nation. The worst treachery imaginable, the murder of our sitting beloved president. And everything, I think, about Americana and America changed that day. Somehow there was a evil cast upon this country that has really taken root in the subsequent 60 years. I wanted to ask you one more thing here. So there's this contracting officer for the CIA. His name is Gavin O'Blenis. And he was caught on hidden camera by an undercover journalist. And he claimed that the FBI could imprison anyone by setting them up, a method he referred to as a nudge. He also claimed that as a CIA agent, the CIA targeted Alex Jones to destroy his career, take him into court, and bankrupt him. I just want your comments on that, because Alex has had you on the broadcast so many times, and Alex Jones has suffered the slings and arrows of the CIA. So none of this has gone away. The CIA is still hell-bent on destroying this nation, in my view. Your thoughts?
Well, the CIA wanted to imprison me. I mean, the deep state. In the Mueller investigation, I was the last witness. They thought I had a tie to Julian Assange, gave the information to Roger Stone, who gave it to Trump, so that the Trump administration could collude with the Russian stolen emails from the Hillary Clinton campaign to use them to the maximum detriment of Hillary Clinton at the end of the 2016 campaign. I had taken a trip to Italy at that time, and on the trip, I figured out that Assange, who had dropped one set of emails at the time of the Democratic National Convention in 2016 on Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who is the DNC chair. Mm-hmm. And these emails showed that Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Hillary Clinton had conspired to keep Bernie Sanders from winning the nomination.
Yep.
Debbie Wasserman Schultz resigned at the start of the convention. Then Assange said he had a second set of emails, and everybody's wondering what they were. And I figured out that it was Podesta's emails. And I knew that the Russians didn't steal the emails because of the nature. I had a lot of information about how the Democrats ran their computer system. This was an inside job. And I knew, studied Podesta. I could tell that these emails would say that Hillary Clinton was suffering from a neurological problem. She was sick. She was not a good campaigner. People didn't like her. And with Perkins Coie, they were diverting campaign funds, violating campaign finance laws. Well, the emails said all those things. And I wrote emails to Roger Stone and to others telling them what was going to be in these emails in advance. And I was right. So, and FBI knocked at my door in August 2018, brought me to the grand jury. I spent 40 hours with them. I gave them my computers, my telephones. I helped the FBI and Quantico with double verification so they could get into anything they wanted. I did not have a source with Assange. They could not find a source with Assange. And so they finally said, well, we're just going to accuse you of lying. We'll bring you before a jury in Washington that will hate you. You'll go to prison the rest of your life. So I was given a plea deal. I struggled over that. And finally, the day after Thanksgiving in 2018, I went public and said, I refuse to take the plea deal. I said, I could not imagine myself swearing before a judge and before God to a lie that I had a tie with Assange when I did not. I said, I will not lie to keep myself out of prison. So I guess the government just better get ready to send me to prison for the rest of my life, because I'll go. And they didn't indict me. They wanted to, but they did not indict me. And then they ended few weeks later, they ended the Mueller report, and they said, we do not have Russian collusion. If I had broken and pleaded guilty, they would have had the tie to Assange, because they would have convicted me of having a tie with Assange that I had lied to, which was not the case. That would have proved Russian collusion in their lying argument against Trump. Trump would have been indicted. Because I refused to take the plea deal, they could not indict me, and it broke their case. They ended the investigation and admitted failure.
God bless you, Doc. That's so powerful. And I know that history, but I'd forgotten some of it. So thanks for reminding us. You're a real American hero. And I'm not just stroking your ego. You really are. And just so people recall, too, those leaked emails from the DNC, I think we can credit Seth Rich for that, and they whacked him for it. One last thing I want to say, those Podesta emails, they indicted these people for what appears to be involvement in pedophilic activities. That whole Comet ping pong thing came up. You mentioned sex clubs in DC way back when. It's only gotten far worse today, hasn't it?
It's pervasive. I think between the sex and drug clubs for the Congress and the money buying Congress, you know, we have the most corrupt Congress ever. The reason that Biden and his son are not being indicted for obvious bribery is because they were engaged in a CIA mission in Ukraine to prop up this corrupt Burisma to compete with Russia's Gazprom to take the gas market in Europe away from Russia. In 2011, I caught HSBC money laundering. One of the officers from Long Island showed me actual accounts where they were running millions of dollars. HSBC was through someone's social security number. It was a legitimate social security number. Then they closed the account. I found out those people knew nothing about it. I was questioned by the Department of Homeland Security, the Senate Permanent Investigating Committee. I gave them all my information. And the HSBC was convicted of criminal money laundering for the Mexican drug cartels. They were fined $1.9 billion and nobody went to jail. The summary of that story is you can't run a drug cartel without a bank because you can't drive around semi-trucks full of $100 bills. So the CIA has been in the drug business since before World War II. Our Treasury knows that these banks launder money for the drug and they wink. We have a wide open border now because the CIA is running drugs. They are dealing with pedophilia. We're bringing fentanyl in the country. The CIA is a criminal organization, and it needs to be shut down.
Perfectly stated. And by the way, you mentioned Burisma. There is a charge coming from the highest levels of the Russian government that Burisma was used as the funding mechanism for the attack on the orchestra hall in Russia. Have you heard that claim?
Yes. And also, Russia's been letting out a lot of information lately, making it clear how corrupt the CIA is and that NATO wants to go to war with Russia. They've also let out the information that the United States created ISIS. Now, I know that to be true, because when that was happening, I was reporting that John McCain, along with his great buddy, John Kerry, especially John McCain, was in the Middle East, and he was reporting with the terrorist leaders who created ISIS. And John McCain and John Kerry came to Congress and they said, we need to work with the moderate terrorists, ISIS, to go against the radical terrorists, Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. Well, then, of course, al-Baghdadi got a hold of ISIS and he turned it around and turned it against us in Fallujah in Iraq. But the origin of ISIS was John McCain and John Kerry, and I reported on it at the time, and Putin's right. So this entire attack, this entire use of ISIS by the CIA to attack the people we don't like in the Middle East, and again, the CIA likes the disruption. They like the war. Abandoning all this equipment in Afghanistan, as Joe Biden did, well, that's okay, then we'll have more funding for more military equipment. The military-industrial complex will love it. More billions of dollars stolen. We are living in the most corrupt environment worldwide that we have. And ironically, it's Putin who's telling the truth. Putin, in his interview with Tucker Carlson, said these two regions in the east of Ukraine, this Donetsk and Donbass, have been allied with Russia for 1,000 years. It's our access, Russia's access to the Black Sea, which is Russia's access to the Atlantic from the Mediterranean Sea, access to the Atlantic in the south. And Russia's not going to give that up. And the State Department's Hillary Clinton started working with Pinochet and other corrupt when she was having her server, special private server, and they were running Clinton foundation business to rake in money when she was Secretary of State. And then with Soros and CIA, they deposed Yanukovych, a legitimately in the Maidan rebellion 2014. He was legitimately elected. He went back to Russia. They put in this guy Poroshenko, who started attacking the brigades in eastern Ukraine who were favorable to Russia. And so, and you know, Russia said if NATO enters the war as NATO, we no longer have a proxy war, we've got a direct war, and it'll be nuclear war. And I would not put it past these demons, deep state demons in the State Department, in the deep recesses of the CIA and the military industrial complex, if it looks like Donald Trump is going to win the election 2024 in such a massive way that they can't steal it. I believe that the October surprise of the deep state will be nuclear war. And I'm trying to announce that now to prevent it from happening.
God. Wow. What a broadcast. Doc, I can't thank you enough for your time. You know, I could talk to you all day and I really want to actually. So let's get you booked again sometime in the near future to talk about the Shroud of Turin. I think it's extremely important because we are in the midst of spiritual warfare, the likes of which I could not imagine people in this country living through when I was a kid. The country was so much different when I was a kid, and it's changing, in my view, for the worst, far, far faster than I ever dreamed possible. How do people get the book? Do you care if they buy it from Amazon, or where would you suggest?
Well, no, we first put it on only on Amazon because we want to get it out before the June elections in Europe, and I now have offers to publish it in Italy. And Archbishop, by the way, Vigano is going to write an introduction for it.
Oh, terrific.
And the book will be published probably also in Spain and Hungary. And buy it on Amazon. It's also now going in the stores. There's copies in Target. We're going to get copies in the stores.
That's great.
So you can get it in various places right now. Just in the process of getting distributed. It's already a bestseller and doing extremely well.
Good.
And I think it's game changing. Once you know what's in this book and the hard science, this is no longer speculation. This hard, cold, scientifically, definitively proves through the x-rays that the assassination of JFK was a deep state coup d'etat and Lee Harvey Oswald was framed for the murder.
Yeah. I love the open source nature of what you've done here. Because they want to bury these documents forever. They never want to release all of the documents. The CIA wants to keep this thing covered up. But you and others over time have proven the real story. The CIA was involved in the murder of our dear president, John F. Kennedy. And by the way, Archbishop Vigano, he warned Trump, guys. Remember that letter from Archbishop Vigano to President Trump warning about the children of darkness?
Yes.
What a small world. I'm just so happy to hear that you're involved with him. And boy, I'd like to get him on sometime too. But in the meantime, we'll get you scheduled. We'll talk about the Shroud of Turin, which I believe is the definitive proof of the existence and the resurrection of the Lord Jesus Christ. We have a lot to talk about in that area. Doc, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate you, sir.
Thank you, Sean. Always a great pleasure to be with you.
My pleasure. God bless you. All right, friends, thanks so much for tuning in. I'll remind you every single day for free. By the way, spread this one far and wide within your sphere of influence on social media because, you know, I'm throttled on Twitter. But for real news every single day, hit us up directly to get the truth, the antidote to corporate propaganda 24/7 at sgtreport.com. And until next time, guys, may God bless you and yours. Bye-bye.
China was 100% on a silver standard. So the Brits had to use silver to pay for all this stuff. All the silver was going out of England into China. They said, we need to stop this. They set up Hong Kong Shanghai Bank, HSBC. And what they did was finance the opium trade to get the Chinese people addicted to opium. And the only payment they'd take for that addiction was silver. And that's how they got silver flowing back into England, was to get the people of China who had silver and had a lovely life addicted to opium, and that's when it all started. Since then, Bank of England, the City of London, even the COMEX, all has been about controlling the price of silver. And even with the Industrial Revolution, most of the silver is now gone, will never come back. People need to start thinking of silver as money again. And when you start thinking that way, it's probably a 1-to-1 gold-silver ratio.